Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell today. I am really excited to have back on one of the smartest, one of the most hardworking, one of the most insightful people at ESPN to talk about this rookie class in the context of a feature I love to do each and every year, our yearly annual dynasty rookie draft of players from the 2023 NFL draft. Joining us today is ESPN's Mike Clay. Mike, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Bill, I'm doing great. It's always, it's funny, we work all throughout the season, right? And then, you know, right after the season ends, you might think we get a break, but it's really just working all the way through the draft, and we're putting our ESPN Fantasy Magazine together now. So I'm finally just starting to get a little breather from the, you know, from August. So it's nice to do that, kind of settle back in now and kind of look at all the work we've done and now sit down with you and do a little bit of a dynasty draft. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, as someone who does the projections for us at ESPN, who thinks about things on a week-to-week basis, but also a season-long basis, love to lean on you for your insight and also just, you know, your perspective on these guys in terms of their careers, not just for this upcoming season, but of course, in the context of a dynasty draft, the years to come. And I think now that stuff is settled from the draft, we get some insight into maybe, you know, not just the initial thoughts about what a guy's landing spot looks like, but also what that means in terms of the big picture. Obviously, you know, some players where you might have hoped they would have landed somewhere and they land somewhere where there's some competition, but maybe, you know, you could see a scenario a year or two from now where stuff breaks out, or maybe a scenario where things don't look quite as appealing as maybe they did on draft night. So I'm really excited to hit this with you. Always feel like I learn a lot each year when we do this exercise. Always changes the way I view this incoming draft class. And I wanted to do I forget whether we've done Superflex in years past. I feel like we've gone back and forth, but I feel like this was a good year to do a Superflex draft because there are several quarterbacks who figure into the conversation this year that really sort of impact how you might go through the first round of a Superflex dynasty rookie draft. So, Mike, of course, you are the guest. I feel like you should go first, and frankly, I want you to go first because I think it is maybe a tougher decision than it might seem. So please, Mike.
Yeah, I actually don't agree with you. I don't think this is a tough decision. I mean, certainly, if we were not doing Superflex, it's a layup that you're going Bijan Robinson. Maybe you think about it for a minute, or not even a minute, maybe like 10 seconds you think about it in Superflex, but no, not for me. I think it might be a different conversation if we had a clear cut number one, you know, Andrew Luck type superstar quarterback that went first overall, but it's a little bit more crowded at the top, as we'll get to here in a few minutes. You know, it's hard to, you know, everyone kind of has a different opinion on who that number one guy is. But look, I look at Bijan Robinson, the eighth overall pick in the draft, and say, look, this is the next, you know, Saquon Barkley, Zeke Elliott, Todd Gurley, whoever you want to, you know, Zeke, you know, whoever you want to compare him to. This is a guy that should be a superstar fantasy asset from day one. And, you know, look, I have him ranked in my top five at running back for this year. You know, wow. He's probably the number one dynasty running back as well. You're going to get some pushback, which is common with rookies, which is how can you invest this much in a guy that's never played down in the NFL? But, you know, we have the last decade to look at, Bill, and you look at the last six running backs picked in the top 10. They were all top 10 fantasy running backs as rookies, all six of them: Zeke, Barkley, Gurley, Leonard Fournette, Trent Richardson, and Christian McCaffrey, who McCaffrey, remember, only had 435 rushing yards. He was barely used as a rusher. It was all in the passing game. And that's notable here because Robinson, yeah, we expect him to carry the ball a ton. He should clear 200 carries pretty easily, even with Cordarrelle Patterson and Tyler Allgeier there. But he's going to be a major, major factor in the passing game for sure. The guy is just an offensive weapon, and he's going to be injected into this extremely run-heavy offense. So, yeah, I think he just follows the path of these other early first-round rookies and has a huge rookie season and is a feature back for quite a long time, only 21 years old, super young. Some of these quarterbacks are a year plus older than him as well. So I think he's well worth, even in Superflex, selecting over any of these quarterbacks.
Interesting. I lean on your judgment. You are the expert here. I guess I'll just ask, you know, is there anything that would give you pause? Like if you were going to say this would be my concern with Bijan Robinson, whether it's injury history, whether it's the competition in Atlanta, whether it's the offense. Is there anything that would give you any hesitation to not have Bijan Robinson be, you know, graded right alongside those great running backs in the top 10 from years past?
Compared to the other running backs, not necessarily. Just in general, it would be, you know, if you're investing a first round redraft pick or the first overall pick in a super flex draft, it would just be the nature of the position, right? You know, it was, believe it or not, last year was actually a good year in terms of running back injuries, and it still felt like a disappointment. It was still like the middle of drafts was still the best spot to attack running back last year in a good year for running back health. Mm-hmm. So it just shows you how tough the position is. But I think in terms of relative to other, you know, past top 10 running backs, it might be the offense, just because what if Desmond Ridder really struggles and Arthur Smith is not, just can't get the job done as a play caller and doesn't utilize him as much as we had hoped, kind of like, you know, Kyle Pitts was a disappointment and Drake London started so well and then fell off last year, although all things considered had a pretty good rookie year. Mm-hmm. They stuck with Marcus Mariota so long. It's just a, you know, people are really frustrated with his utilization of some of these guys. But I will say this, it was a very low volume offense. It was an aggressive offense when they were throwing the ball. We know that's the nature of the beast with Marcus Mariota, but the target shares for Pitts and London were massive, right? They were massive. I mean, Mark Andrews was the only tight end with a higher target share than Kyle Pitts at 28% was Pitts, and London was at 29, which was one of the highest in the NFL as well. So when they did throw the ball, they featured those two guys. And I think we're going to see something similar with Robinson's usage, right? When they're, you know, they're going to snap the ball, he's going to be factored in some capacity into the offense. I think maybe Tyler Algier was really good last year. Yeah. Right. So maybe him at being at 224 pounds coming off a good rookie year, maybe he steals some, you know, more carries than we're expecting. And Robinson ends up closer to like 200 carries instead of 250. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think you spend the eighth overall pick and then do that. Right. And we have a lot of history that tells us that that won't be the case. Robinson should be a 300 plus touch player.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, to me, I'm almost less concerned about Algier than I am about Pitts in London, where you have two guys who were also taken in the top 10, where you have now, I mean, three players who should get, of course, a ton of volume, and any offense can support three players getting a lot of volume if it's very concentrated within those three guys. But I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how this offense plays out. Like you said, volume was not necessarily there, but it was super efficient. It was like, I think, in the top 12 in DVOA last year. So it wasn't that the offense was bad. It just wasn't what people who had Kyle Pitts or Drake London in fantasy football were hoping for necessarily. But I mean, so many exciting playmakers on this offense, major question mark at quarterback, in a dome, could be an opportunity for shootouts if, you know, the defense does struggle, which I think we, you know, a lot of people expect for the defense not to be very good again here in 2023. So such an interesting range of outcomes. But, you know, Bijan Robinson, like you said, you know, the draft capital, the history, the production makes you think he has a pretty high floor and then a really exciting ceiling as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very light schedule, by the way, for the NFC South this year as well. Part of that is because that division is not too good.
Right.
With, you know, Derek Carr is easily the best short-term quarterback. You know, you'd expect Bryce Young to be that long-term, but for now it's, you know, it's Derek Carr in New Orleans, and you're talking about Bryce Young and again, Desmond Ridder, and of course, either Kyle Trask or Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay. So on top of that, and then you add, factor in the rest of the schedule, it looks pretty good. I mean, it's kind of hilarious to look at the Saints schedule, for example. I mean, Atlantis is right there as well, but especially the Saints schedule, yeah, the quarterbacks are going to face this year. It's like, all right, Kirk Cousins, Justin Fields. That's like, I guess they have, I think they have Jacksonville. If not, yeah, they have Jacksonville, Trevor Lawrence. That's like, that's the best quarterbacks they're going to play this season. And that applies to most of this division.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely helps when you are trying to win a division title and trying to compete in fantasy football as well. So absolutely, a really interesting landing spot for Bijan Robinson at Atlanta. But, you know, I think you can raise some questions, but certainly no one's going to fault you for taking Bijan Robinson first overall in any kind of fantasy draft this upcoming season, or any type of dynasty draft, I should say. At two, yeah. I think I have to go to Anthony Richardson. I guess there's obviously a lot of projectability here, of course. I mean, we haven't seen him do much at all in college. This guy only had a handful of starts at the college level, but just a incredibly exciting athlete with huge upside, landing in, I think, a great landing spot. You know, maybe Jonathan Taylor's presence hurts him in terms of having some touchdown equity near the goal line, but I think a situation where he's going to have time to grow. He has a good coaching staff by all accounts, some playmakers there, not as good as other places certainly, but a solid playmaker group, an offensive line that I thought was good heading into last year and was a disaster last year. But I think about someone like Randall Cunningham, where in a, obviously a very different sport, in football, you know, 30 years ago, Randall Cunningham had three top four finishes in fantasy football, not at quarterback, just in general. You know, a guy who has that sort of really significant upside, where, you know, he could be a version of Lamar Jackson. He could be a league winner for you if things break right. So this is a much, much lower floor than Bijan Robinson. But I think the ceiling with Anthony Richardson in a super flex, not in a standard league, in a super flex, is just so incredibly exciting.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that is probably certainly quarterback is the next best pick here. I mean, you can make a case for Jahmyr Gibbs, who we'll talk about shortly, but I'm totally fine pivoting to quarterback at this spot. It just comes down to, do you play it kind of safer with like a Bryce Young or a CJ Stroud, who you believe could be a good pocket passer and be a perennial back end QB1, you know, think about like a Rodgers, Brady, Stafford sort of fantasy producer, you know, not necessarily saying they get to that level, but in terms of fantasy production through the air, can they get there? Or do you take the riskier Anthony Richardson, who may have a higher ceiling because of what he does with his legs, but is obviously extremely risky because of his inexperience at Florida, as well as his horrific passing efficiency. Mm-hmm. So, but again, I mean, Richardson could be, or let me put it this way, Young and Stroud could be top 10 passers in the NFL and struggle for quarterback one production because they don't run much. And Richardson could be a below average passer and be an outstanding fantasy quarterback because of what he does with his legs. And
no question.
And that applies short term too, by the way, because if you look back at the quarterbacks who have been successful in fantasy as rookies, in fact, since 2011, eight quarterbacks have been 13th or better in fantasy points as rookies. All of them were productive with their legs. All eight had at least 213 rushing yards. They averaged over 440, and all of them had at least four rushing touchdowns. And if you line up those three quarterbacks, Stroud, Young, and Richardson, and say, do any of these three have a chance to get there? I mean, Richardson absolutely should blow by these numbers if he's healthy for 15 plus games. The other two might not get there. You know, they're both of them did very little with their legs at the college level, especially Stroud, and they just may be pocket quarterbacks. So I'm with you. I totally get the appeal of going Richardson. It's just he's a tricky one to figure out, because if he's if he struggles throwing the ball, you know, I think, you know, the other day on the Fantasy Focus podcast, Field brought up Trey Lance as an example, you know, just
no question.
You know, if he's just not an effective passer, it's not going to matter much. He'll end up getting benched for Gardner Minshew. So that's really the risk you're taking here.
In terms of how do I want to ask this question? We don't know if he's going to start this year, but just in terms of how you project him for this upcoming season, not just in Dynasty Fantasy football, but just in a more traditional season-long league, where would you be willing to draft Anthony Richardson given the upside? Like, is he just a player you're not willing to take until you you see him get the starting job? Maybe a guy you want to highlight on waivers, or are you comfortable drafting him in season-long drafts?
Yeah, so here's the thing. He's a guy I would love to take in the later rounds as a flyer, you know, just kind of throw on my bench there, use for trade bait. Maybe he does emerge as a QB1. Maybe he explodes out of the gate like Robert Griffin was, where remember RG3 was the QB1 early on in his career. But the problem is people are looking at that rushing ability and athleticism and drafting him very early. I mean, he's going around Dak Prescott and Tua ahead of guys like Kirk Cousins, Daniel Jones, who was a QB1 last year, Aaron Rodgers. You know, Geno Smith was QB5 last year. He's going ahead of him. So that's what makes it tricky, right? Because there's a lot of certified good quarterbacks, certainly in fantasy, that you can go with. And, you know, think about Mahomes, Allen, Hurts is the big tier, and then Burrow and Lamar Jackson, and then Fields, Herbert, Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence. It's already nine, right? So if you're in a 10, 12 team league, that's really where you're going to look at for your starting QB1. After that, there's probably more risk. I mean, if you went, if those nine guys are off the board and then you want to take a shot on Richardson and then to maybe take a safer fallback, like a, I don't know, a Rodgers or Jared Goff or Geno Smith, Russell Wilson, one of those guys, I guess that's fine. But you still have, again, you still have Prescott and Cousins and Jones and Tua, who was outstanding when he played last year, and Rodgers now with the Jets. I mean, you don't have to really take that risk in that range, and you could still get a mid to back end QB1. And honestly, I'm just not like, I know Richardson maybe because of his legs has that elite ceiling, but I don't know if he's more likely than any of those guys I just mentioned to be a, you know, a mid-range QB1. And he's riskier. So it just, he's going too early for me. I'd love to have him on my bench. Don't get me wrong, but just where he's going and the quarterbacks he's up against, it just seems like a little much for me.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. Who do you have with the third overall pick?
So third pick, again, it's tempting to go quarterback, you know, go with Bryce or Stroud in a super flex, but, you know, I just talked about all the success top 10 running backs have had, in over the last decade or so. And Jamar Gibbs just missed that cut. He went 12th overall. Right. And he was clearly, highly regarded by the Lions. He's not quite as big. I do worry about the frame a little bit, 5'9", 199, but the fact that he has that pedigree and joins a Lions offense that led the NFL in fantasy points last year. The Lions running back room had the most fantasy points and touchdowns last year. So I'm going to go Gibbs here. You know, he's going to team up with David Montgomery. Montgomery's much bigger. He's going to be busy at the goal line for sure. But remember, even in this, Gibbs is essentially replacing DeAndre Swift, right? That role. And then some, but DeAndre Swift, with all his problems, with all his injuries, he's been top 25 in fantasy points per game every year of his career. He has at least seven touchdowns every year of his career. And this line, you know, Gibbs is going to work behind this elite Lions offensive line. It's just, it's a recipe for a lot of success out of the gate. So again, I'm a little worried about the ceiling. He certainly doesn't have Robinson's ceiling, but I do think he's going to be an RB2 right out of the gate, maybe a top 15 running back right out of the gate, super young, just really a lot to like in a good situation behind an offensive line that's going to be really good for a long time. So I'm going to get Gibbs on my roster here. I really like him.
So the Montgomery thing is really interesting because I don't know when the Lions decided they love Jahmyr Gibbs, but whether they decided that in February or at the combine or after free agency, maybe they didn't think they'd have a shot at getting him. Or they don't think, I guess they were at six. They could have taken him at six. They you know, they traded down and then got Gibbs at 12. But I just, it seems so weird to me that they would go out and sign David Montgomery. It's not a huge deal, but still a meaningful deal to take the Jamal Williams role in this offense and then go out and get Gibbs to take over the, you know, some more significant version of the DeAndre Swift situation. Now, obviously, Montgomery doesn't have to be there in the long term. They can move on from him after 1 year, more realistically too, but at least 1 year there in Detroit. But does that give you any pause, or is it just the draft capital so enticing to you that's going to overwhelm the short-term concerns about someone like Montgomery on the roster?
Yeah, a little pause on the ceiling. But then again, I mean, who's a guy with a similar frame to, again, and I understand he's an exception to the rule, but a guy that's built similarly is Austin Eckler, right? Yep. And, you know, you've seen Alvin Kamara be and even Christian McCaffrey, who's bigger. But, I mean, these are guys that have done most of their damage in the passing game and have been outstanding in fantasy. So that allows me to feel a little better about the situation, right? Can you be an RB1 in fantasy consistently with, say, 150 carries? Yeah, we've seen that, right? So, you know, maybe 150 to 200 in that range. And that's kind of what my expectation is here for Jahmyr Gibbs. In fact, this season, I have him, again, ranked as like a mid-range RB2. I have him with 166 carries and 47 catches. So if he, you know, if he stays healthy and plays every game, it's gonna, the numbers will be above that. So no, you know, I'm not really worried about it. And by the way, I think that the thought process there is, okay, we lost Jamal Williams, we need to replace him. That's David Montgomery. And then I think we all kind of knew in the back of our head, it seemed like DeAndre Swift's days were probably numbered with the Lions. It just seemed inevitable. I remember we did a podcast segment just kind of speculating on trades, and I had him being traded to the Chiefs, like, and this is months ago. So there wasn't really a shock that they were ready to move on. And because of that, because they already kind of knew he was gone, they replaced him with Gibbs and then traded away Swift. So they wanted that 1-2 punch. And we can argue all day about if they should be spending so much on running backs, which it's a lot of investment there. I don't necessarily agree with the game plan,
For sure.
especially for a team that struggled so badly on defense. I mean, that crushed them last year. The offense was so good. I don't necessarily agree with that, but they did. That's their priority, and they spent their assets there. So I just think behind that line too, there's just a lot of room for a lot of production for two backs. And I expect both of them to be top 25 fantasy running backs this season.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there's we can talk about whether it was a good idea. It's a different podcast, but the reality is it is, this is what the situation is, and play the cards as they're dealt. And I think Jahmyr Gibbs is in a really exciting spot in Detroit, like Bijan Robinson, also indoors at home, which is going to help, for a guy with his speed and his catching ability. I think he's going to have a big role, a meaningful role from the jump, and then, a role that's hopefully going to grow even bigger as the year goes on and into 2024 and beyond. As I sit here at four, it's kind of tough. I feel like, you could make a case for Bryce Young or CJ Stroud. I lean towards Bryce Young just because I think he's a quarterback I'm a little more optimistic about in terms of his situation. I like what Carolina's built in terms of the offensive infrastructure. I think the offensive line is better than maybe people give it credit for. I think they were able to field a solid running game last year behind that line. Hopefully should be the case again this year. And then I think just I have a lot of faith in Frank Reich. I think he's been a very good coach. I know that didn't end well in Indianapolis, but I think on the whole, he's gotten more out of the quarterbacks he's had than the other coaches who have had those same quarterbacks, outside of, again, of course, last year being the exception. Receivers, they're okay. They're not going to blow me away. They miss DJ Moore, obviously, but I just think Bryce Young is a player who's going to step in, look like a pro. He's going to belong from day one. A player who, his skill set, what he does in the field, his ability to read the whole field, his ability to set and reset projections. He's not going to be a guy who's going to run for crazy yardage or anything, but I think he's a player who is going to be smart. When there are opportunities to run, he's athletic enough to take those opportunities and run for first downs and, pick up safe yardage, which is, good for fantasy football and good for real football as well. And I just think, I have a lot of faith that he's going to be put in a position to succeed. So, I think CJ Stroud might have a more exciting skill set, especially for fantasy football, but I think Young is just in a better spot to be a player who succeeds in 2023 and into the years to follow as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. That would have been my pick as well. Again, just the modern NFL, the modern fantasy football game, it's so important to add value with your legs. That's really the concern with Young and Stroud. And sometimes that changes, right? Sometimes for example, CJ Stroud, just a pure pocket passer in college, added very little with his legs. Maybe that changes in the pros. Maybe he's still very young, and that's something that guys aren't going to be as wide open in the NFL. Maybe he runs a little more than we expect, and he ends up rushing for 300 yards a season and three or four touchdowns, and that's going to be enough to help kind of boost his fantasy appeal. So, and that could be the same thing for Bryce Young, of course. One thing I would say though is just keep kind of expectations in check. Short term, year two is really the breakout age for quarterbacks. So, whereas Richardson's legs could put him on the fantasy radar right away, it's probably going to be a struggle for Young and Stroud to come anywhere close to QB1 production out of the gate. In fact, if you look at even quarterbacks since 2011, 12 quarterbacks were picked first or second and played in at least 10 games. Those 12 averaged a little under 3,400 yards and 17.4 passing touchdowns, right? So, and that's some superstars. That's think about that first and second overall pick. Some of them guys made a huge leap in year two and became stars. So, you take those guys even in a super flex league, maybe you get mid to back in QB1, QB2 numbers out of the gate, and then you kind of hope they make that year two leap.
Absolutely. You are up at five.
I am. So you took you again. You're making my choices kind of easy here for the most part, right? So you took Bryce. I'll take Stroud. I'll take CJ Stroud. Very much like Bryce Young, checks a lot of boxes as a passer, right? Good arm, outstanding accuracy at Ohio State. But unlike Young, he is the size, right? Nobody's worried about that. Young's 5'10", 204. Stroud's 6'3", 214. He has the frame, has the an absurd efficiency. You can almost make a case he was more efficient than Young was at the college level. Certainly, statistically, the categories he led this class in: completion rate, yards per attempt, catchable pass rate, QB rating, QBR. all that fun stuff. So again, I'm knocking him a little over the rushing. I've already talked about that, but he has a lot of upside as an NFL passer, and Houston, you know, headed the right direction. You know, that's another team that's improving their offensive line, much like Carolina, probably better than people realize. Mm-hmm. The targets need some work for sure. That's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of guys battling for that number one job even. So we'll see how that plays out. It's going to be a work in progress, but I think it's a pretty good landing spot for a team that's going to be on the ascent here in the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I've got a lot of grandbabies, like a lot. And when it comes to finding a gift for each of them, you know, it could add up. But this year, while I was making my way through Walmart, I realized I don't have to spend a lot to get the gifts they'll love.
An OPI mini mani set. I'm going to do so much nail art.
Oh, yeah! A Lego set!
My own Owala water bottle!
Ooh, and that's just half of them.
Shop great gifts they're sure to love for $25 and under at Walmart.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited. See mintmobile.com for details.
Pro Paint Days are back at Lowe's. That means it's time to save big on your next job. Right now, get your choice of 5-gallon pails of Valspar Signature Ceiling Paint or HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams Flat Ceiling Paint for just $148. Plus, get it delivered to your job site with free same-day delivery when you order by 2 p.m. Lowe's knows paint. Lowe's knows pros. Valid through December 20th. Delivery by 8 p.m. Subject to driver availability. Additional terms apply. See Lowe's.com/same-day-delivery for details.
Craven, the hunter, who uses all the methods of the animals.
Now, witness the making of a new Marvel villain.
Once you're on his list, there's only one way off.
Aaron Taylor-Johnson is Craven the Hunter. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
Here's where it opens up now. We got those five guys out of the way. Now it's wide receiver time, I assume, at six. So this is a tough one. I feel like whoever I pick, I'm worried you're going to say I'm wrong. So I want to trade down here if I could. But no, I will go with Quentin Johnston here at six. And I think, you know, obviously with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I think that would have been my other option. Maybe you go in a different direction. I'm interested to see what you think. But I just think of the guys here, Johnston has the most clear path towards possibly being a number one receiver in 2 years. And with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, obviously DK Metcalf is there. With Jordan Addison, obviously you have, Justin Jefferson. I couldn't think of the literal fantasy player one's name for a moment. So that's not a good sign for me. You say Flowers, who of course could be there, but we have questions about that offense, and that's going to be, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a minute. But I just think Johnston, with Keenan Allen coming to the end of his deal, with Mike Williams on a short-term contract, you know, the upside is there to be a all-levels number one receiver. I don't think he's as good as Smith-Njigba or Jordan Addison, but I think the landing spot is so exciting to me for Quentin Johnston that I'm really optimistic that, you know, he could be the guy with Justin Herbert for the next 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. I had Johnston ahead of Smith-Njigba for a lot of the pre-draft process, and I ended up flip-flopping as more reports came in and you heard more quotes from scouts, and it just seemed that Smith-Njigba was the clear number one. Like, that was the view of the league, and it's kind of a close call. So I kind of ended up leaning that direction, but I have no qualms with what you're saying. This is probably going to be Keenan Allen's final year, you would imagine, as he's entering, you know, he's pushing for what, his mid-30s now. I think he's 31, turns 32, and Mike Williams has had his injury issues over the years. So no doubt about it, I certainly get the appeal. I do have Smith-Njigba a little ahead. I would have leaned that direction, but it's a toss-up. It really is. I mean, think about it. These guys were picked, what was it, 20th, 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, the first receivers, the receivers you just listed. Right. They were the only receivers picked in the first round, and they went all back to back to back to back. So it's kind of pick your poison sort of thing. Smith and Jigba just looked, you know, looked awesome at the combine. Short area speed looks great. He should be just one of the next best slot receivers in the NFL. Tyler Lockett's getting up there as well. So sure. Maybe it's 2024 that he steps in as the number two there as a really, really good complement to DK Metcalf. And look, yeah, Metcalf might be the number one there for the long term. I think that's kind of our expectation. But last year, I mean, you look at the top 15 or 20 fantasy receivers, it is made up of a ton of duos. I mean, a ton of duos. And that includes Seattle with Metcalf and Lockett, but also A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. And, you know, on a points per game basis, T. Higgins and Jamar Chase are up there. So that there's just a lot of duos that get the job done. And if you're in a good offense, it can happen. So I'm not really too worried about that. I think if Smith and Jigba is the real deal, This is a guy that can immediately join will join the wide receiver two radar once he's one of the top two receivers in this offense.
So you're taking him at seven then?
I sure am, yes.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it makes sense. And I think you could, you know, no issue taking him at six either. You know, there's certainly a lot to be impressed by. Certainly look at what he did at Ohio State, not last year, but the year before. And, I mean, he was every bit as good, if not better, than Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, and those guys were superstars in the NFL in their first season with middling quarterback play. So Smith and Jigba, I think, is a super exciting prospect as well. That leaves me at eight then. Mm-hmm. And I think I would lean towards Jordan Addison here.
Like it.
At eight. I look at that offense, and obviously, you know, the ceiling is, it's going to be tough. You're never going to get, maybe never is the wrong word, but it's going to be hard for you to get 180 targets a year with Justin Jefferson, you know, being the other guy on that offense. But we've seen teams support two wide receivers playing at a high level. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are a perfect example. Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. Go back to another Bengals combination. Chad Johnson and T.J. Houston-Zada. Like, right. Like there's plenty of times offenses can support two superstars at wide receiver, even if it's not the dream scenario where you get Addison, you know, with a quarterback who is about to break out and he's the lead guy. Of course, that'd be great. And that was the hope, you know, coming out of this draft. But Minnesota is a very fine landing spot. They're a team that does not have a good defense, has a coach that is a quarterback-friendly coach. There's obviously questions about the quarterback situation in the future, but there's a chance they could upgrade on Kirk Cousins after this season when he's a free agent, an analytically inclined team. So you think they're going to be pretty smart about wanting to throw the football. They play indoors. Lots of reasons, I think, to believe that Jordan Addison, even if that you had that initial kind of hit of, oh, he's not going to get those opportunities behind Justin Jefferson, I think there's a lot of reasons to believe he's going to have plenty of chances to succeed. And, oh, by the way, now he'll be playing in an offense where the other guy is going to get double coverage. He's going to get safety shaded his way. He's going to get defenses worried about him at all times. So Jordan Addison, even if he doesn't get as many targets, may be in a position where it's a little bit easier for him to succeed because he is the number two with a dominant number one in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. In terms of short-term landing spot, one of the best for sure. And of the four four first round wide receivers, he definitely had the best landing spot in terms of a path to a number two job. So I'm with you there. I like that. I got a little nervous with him at the combine, the 4.49 40 at 173 pounds. Red flag for sure. Yep. You know, hopefully that was fluky and he can kind of put that to rest and instead, you know, we see what we saw at college, right? He was extremely productive. That 2021 season at Pitt, 100 catches that year, you know, almost 1,600 yards, 17 touchdowns. You know, if he can work his way into kind of an Emmanuel Sanders, Tyler Lockett sort of role in the pros, that would be just fine. So not quite the ceiling, I think, of some of these other guys, especially at that size, but you got to love the landing spot. I don't know if people realize this, you know, Kirk Cousins takes such a beating in the media all the time, right? He's just a guy people like to pick on.
Yep.
But I mean, since he's gotten to Minnesota, the Vikings are sixth in offensive touchdowns. And over the last 3 years, they're fifth. The only people ahead in terms of, you know, quarterback play, Mahomes, Allen, Rodgers, and Brady. They're the only, those are the only offenses ahead of the Kirk Cousins Vikings the last three seasons. So, you know, Addison could even be a sneaky guy for, you know, five, six, seven touchdowns this season.
Absolutely. No question at all. Who do you have here then at the ninth pick?
Yeah, this is tricky because this is an easy spot to get caught up in landing spot here. So for me, it comes down to Zay Flowers in Baltimore, which is a tough one. You know, there's some concerns there with the, you know, the potential for a low volume passing game continuing there. And also the other one would be pivoting to Dalton Kincaid at tight end, right? And he lands in a really high volume pass heavy Bills offense. So it's tough, but I'm going to chase the receiver here and go with Zay Flowers. I'm going to go with Flowers. The hope here will be that, you know, look, he could be the number one. You know, maybe a little bit of a Chris Olave feel, where last year we were like, well, Michael Thomas is there, so he might be brought on a little slow. The offense might not be good. Suspect quarterback play, that kind of thing. But, you know, Thomas has tricky durability and obviously didn't play most of last season. And the same kind of thing here with Odell Beckham. Not to mention around it, Rashad Bateman is the other competition there, a former first round pick who's had a ton of injury issues. They do have Mark Andrews. We know he'll be featured in this offense. We know that Lamar Jackson, even if they open up the offense more, is going to scramble a lot. That's going to take away volume. But I like the talent here. You know, I like Flowers. He's built kind of similar to Addison in that he's on the smaller side, but his speed was a little bit better and obviously was very productive at Boston College. So I'm just going to buy into Mel Kiper's number one wide receiver. You know, a lot of people had him number one. He was a very, you know, popular player in the pre-draft process. And, you know, I think that Baltimore has made an effort here to put weapons around Lamar Jackson, and he's their potential long-term number one. And by the way, that's a role that allowed Marquise Brown some pretty good fantasy success. So, Flowers is the real deal and takes that number one job either this year or next year. Then there's going to be a chance for him to be a weekly starter in fantasy. So I will go Flowers here.
Yeah. I mean, a player who, you know, Marquise Brown, the efficiency numbers were fantastic. The cumulative numbers, not always great, some of which was injury, some of which was just them not throwing very often. But if they throw more, which is certainly seems like it's in the realm of possibilities for this upcoming season. And if Odell Beckham gets hurt, if Rashad Bateman gets hurt, both of whom have been injured plenty in years past, that open up an opportunity for Zay Flowers to be the number one as early as this season. And absolutely think that he is in a great spot. A guy who, you know, like, I don't want to, I feel bad saying this because it's maybe a little unfair, but remember the Brandon Ayuk stuff in year two where Kyle Shanahan got on him for like not blocking and maybe it cost him some snaps early in the season and kind of he had to work his way out of that. You know, Zay Flowers is a guy who has such a great reputation coming out of college as a guy who's a fighter, someone who's who's a blocker, someone who's going to give his all, like a guy who coaches are going to want to play. And, you know, he's going to get an opportunity to play anyway because he's the number one pick. But, you know, I just think he's a guy who coaches are going to try to fight to have more reasons to get him on the field. So I think there's going to be no issue with getting him on the field there. And I think he's going to play a lot and be effective. So I think no issue taking him with the 9th overall pick. Yep, I'll finish up. Yeah. I'll finish up what we call the first round here. We'll do this as the final pick of the first round and then do kind of a lightning second round. I'll take Kincaid. I'm a little nervous. I mean, he is a little bit older than you might like for some of your prospects. He is a player who, you know, really only one significant season at school. You know, at Utah, he had a good year at San Diego, but that was, you know, at a different level. You know, but a guy who I think you can see the path to being the number two receiver in a very exciting passing offense. And I think the Bills really realized their issues after last season where they did struggle, where they had sort of a season similar to the 2021 Chiefs, where they, you know, they struggled to move the ball consistently. They weren't as effective when it came to throwing the ball because teams were not afraid of them running the football. And we saw the Chiefs fix that by going out and getting Isaiah Pacheco, going with more two tight end, three tight end sets post Tyreek Hill. And it worked for that offense. They won a Super Bowl. The Bills, I think, Kincaid is not a blocker. I mean, he's not Mike Gesicki, but he's not even Travis Kelce when it comes to blocking. But I think Kincaid is their move to go towards more 12 personnel. It's going to be more Damian Harris at running back and Kincaid and Dawson Knox at tight end. And I think they're going to give him the opportunity to get mismatches. I think he's going to see a lot of linebackers. He's going to see a lot of safeties in coverage. And I think, you know, he's going to be a player who will have opportunities to be a player out of the slot for the Bills. So I think he's not a traditional inline tight end, but I do think the upside is there to be a, you know, again, sort of closer to Gesicki than Kelce, but a player who could be the number two receiver in a really good, exciting, dynamic passing offense with Josh Allen for years to come.
Yep, I'm with you. You know, initially I was a little worried about his short-term production just because, first of all, rookie tight ends, not known for doing much damage from a fantasy perspective. It usually takes a while, year two or three. Also, Dawson Knox is there, right? Sometimes those guys get drafted. Even someone like a Sam Laporta, for example, right? He goes to Detroit and could be the number one right away. Whereas Buffalo, you're probably still even a good veteran in Dawson Knox, who you just re-signed, that's probably going to play a ton of snaps, right? He played more snaps per game than Stephon Diggs did last season, right? So he's going to have a role in that offense. And I was worried, like, Kincaid's probably going to trail him for a chunk of the season in usage. The snaps might not be there. The targets might not be there. Maybe he passes him eventually, but, you know, just following it more closely and listening to the commentary, the commentary essentially is, look, when Kincaid's on the field with Knox, we still view that as 11. You know, he's essentially going to be a wide receiver, not a tight end. So I've come around on that, and I boosted his target share a little bit as a result, because look at this. They have Stephon Diggs. They have Gabriel Davis, who is basically Marquez Valdez-Scantling at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how he's being utilized. He's just a low percentage target, vertical, situational player. He's out in the field a lot, but they're just not throwing to him enough. And then it's battling for their number three job. And keep in mind, this is an extremely pass heavy, high scoring offense. Khalil Shakir, who was a fifth rounder last year, Deontay Hardy, who comes over from the Saints, and Trent Sherfield. They also took Justin Shorter in the fifth round. I mean, those are the guys competing for the three job. So that really should be Kincaid's job right there. So I'm with you. It might take a month or so, but I think Kincaid could be as high as second or third in terms of target priority in one of the league's best offenses. So like that, and like him long-term, obviously a first-round tight end. There's a lot of success stories there. Mm-hmm. Even if they get off to a slow start, this is a guy that should be a tight end one for a long time in fantasy circles. So I'm with you there. I think that was the right call.
Yeah, I mean, someone like TJ Hawkinson, you know, hasn't had that sort of like blow away, oh my God, this is the best tight end in football season, but he still had two top five finishes at tight end in 4 years to start his career, and is incredibly well positioned, even with the addition of Jordan Addison in Minnesota, to be, you know, a focal point of that offense for years to come. So absolutely, I think that, you know, might be a slow start, but certainly, like you said, guy who has a really good spot for the years to come. Let's lightning round here through 10 picks in the second round to finish up. So I went with Kincaid at 10. Please, Mike, start us at 11 with your pick for our lightning round.
Yeah, sure. So Sky Moore did not work out last year as our, you know, a popular sleeper as he joined the high scoring Chiefs offense. So let's just do it again with another second round receiver. I'll go Rashee Rice, second rounder out of SMU. Again, just wide open, wide receiver depth chart there in Kansas City. So I'll take a shot on Rice here and hope he's the real deal. If he is, I mean, look out. He could be Patrick Mahomes' number one receiver almost immediately.
For sure. The upside is incredibly high with Rashee Rice in Kansas City. I'll go Devin Achane at 12. Maybe it's chasing running backs a little bit. But certainly that Dolphins running back room was not good last year. They were very efficient by next gen stats in terms of blocking, but very mediocre running. I think their running backs were number 32 in the NFL, worst in the NFL when it came to rush yards over expectation. So I think there's a big opportunity there. And Devin Achane, of course, any Kyle Shanahan disciple offense, you know the upside for the running back. So I'll go Devin Achane there at 12.
Wow. I'm way low on him. I have him eighth at running back. Wow. It's just too tiny. 5'8", 180.
Not wrong.
Just no fantasy upside there, I don't think. Right. I just, and also his pass catching efficiency, awful at the college level. I have major, major concerns. I see speed. I see big plays. At times, I see a very, very limited upside in fantasy there.
Fair enough. Okay, what's your next pick?
So I'm going to go, I'm keeping an eye on Will Levis here, but I'm going to stick with the second round receiver, Marvin Mims. I'm going to go to Denver. That's a team that did not really have a need at wide receiver and still took Marvin Mims. So they clearly like him a lot. And, you know, Sean Payton's there. If he gets Russell Wilson turned around the next few seasons, Mims could be, a fantasy starter. So I'll go Mims here.
Yeah, I mean, certainly they traded up to get him. They had very limited draft capital to begin with. Mm-hmm. Certainly tells you what Sean Payton thought about Marvin Mims being a significant player in that offense. And once they trade, or if they do trade one of those receivers, suddenly opportunities open up for Marvin Mims to be a focal point of that offense. I'll stick with the wide receivers. I'll go with Jalin Hyatt. with the Giants, okay. where I think there's, you know, again, speed is the key word here. Maybe not a complete skill set, but intrigued about his upside. Clearly the Giants needed a downfield weapon. They have Darius Slayton, but this is a coaching staff that didn't have much faith in him last season until they had no choice but to play him. Lots of twos and threes in that receiving group. I think Jalin Hyatt can be a speed threat in year one and maybe even a number one receiver for the Giants as early as 2024.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that. And I'll just keep following this suit here. Actually, you went a third round receiver. I'm going to go back to round two for receiver and go Jaden Reed. Again, another guy that could play a little older, actually, than some of these other guys, but an opportunity to play right away. And look, if Jordan Love is even okay as a passer and Reed locks down the number two job opposite Christian Watson, he could be in for a big role right out of the gate. And again, second round pedigree here. They like him a lot. I know that he was drafted before a lot of people thought he would be, but a lot of opportunity here. And again, I'm generally going to chase pedigree and I like him in the round in round two here.
Yeah. I'll go with Michael Mayer. Go back to the second round for a tight end here in Mayer. You know, he's been such like a, just feel like people are bored with Michael Mayer before he's even entered the NFL. You know, there's just so much more exciting tight end prospects, but the comps here have been to guys like Jason Witten, to, you know, guys who are inline tight ends who played forever and who were successful forever. And maybe that's unfair. You know, maybe it's tough to be that kind of player, but I mean, those guys can have such long careers and be such impactful players. Having even a good tight end who's solid is such a valuable piece in fantasy football. So, you know, I think that's going to be an exciting offense. I think there's going to be more opportunities to go around after this season, you know, with Davante Adams maybe slipping, with Hunter Renfro being possibly cut after this year. I think Mayer could be a number two receiver in that offense as early as next season. So I just think boring pick, but I think a high floor pick at tight end.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Totally could see, you know, Hockenson, Dallas Goedert, you know, sort of fantasy production. So if you get long-term mid-range tight end one numbers, that's fantastic. So like that. I will, you know, go back to the, you know, we're thinking super flex here. So I'll go with a second round quarterback, which I don't like to do because the hit rate is so poor. But I'm finding myself becoming a little bit of a Will Levis apologist here. So I'm going to go with him. Obviously good size, but also, again, we keep harping on this. Rushing production, you know, back in 2021, you take away sacks, which are in the rushing numbers at the college level, 514 yards and 9 carries on 85 carries. Now, he was hurt a lot last year, those numbers dropped, but, you know, we were tricked by that before with Josh Allen, who didn't run a lot his final year. And then as he did earlier in his career, and look what he's done in the pros. So this is a guy that could be starting this season if they fall out of contention. I don't think the Titans are very good. You know, maybe Mike Vrabel gets the most out of them and they hang in there in the race in that division. But I think Will Levis might make some starts. And that combination of size and I like the way he threw the ball at the combine, combined with the rushing ability, intriguing for me. So in super flex at this point, I'll take a dart throw.
Yeah, I don't blame you there at all. At 18, I'll take the bullet. And I'll go with Zach Charbonnet. I'm not thrilled about the landing spot, but you know, again, like I think there's this opinion that, oh, well, they already have Kenneth Walker. They used the same draft capital on Kenneth Walker that they used on Zach Charbonnet. They used a second round pick on Kenneth Walker a year ago. He was at 41. Zach Charbonnet, where was he in the first round or second round this year?
Yeah, it was 52. 44 or something?
52. It was 52. So 52, there you go. A little lower, but not that far off. And I think it tells you, you know, that they're Kenneth Walker's obviously a very exciting player, but he was the least efficient back in football in terms of success rate last year, in terms of consistency. So obviously he can hit those home runs, but you know, I think that tells you that Seahawks number one want to keep committing to running the football, and number two think that Zach Charbonnet is going to play a meaningful role. So obviously you need a Kenneth Walker injury to pay off to be an absolute superstar, but I think he's going to have a bigger role than maybe people think.
Yeah, it's too bad. It shows you just how much landing spot matters, because imagine if he got drafted by Cincinnati and they cut Joe Mixon. Yep. I mean, we'd be talking about Charbonnet as an RB2 right now with RB1 upside as a rookie. And instead, he's basically the 1B in that backfield. Yeah, I'm a big Kenneth Walker fan, super efficient as a rusher. And then Charbonnet, the better pass catcher, you know, so he could have somewhat of a role there. Remember Travis Homer left as well. He had a bit of a role in the passing game there. It just That means touches. That means maybe he gets 8 to 12 touches. But in terms of fantasy output, it's going to be a tough road for Charbonnet in the short term. So definitely understand where you're coming from there. And my last pick, right? We're 19 here. I have one guy that stands out like a sore thumb, and it's the last second round wide receiver. Jonathan Mingo.
Yep.
And in terms of a guy who landed in a land, you know, a wide receiver who landed somewhere where he could be the number one receiver right away, this is probably the easiest path, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about Carolina's receiver situation earlier. It's DJ Chark. It is who's probably best as a two and has had injury issues. Adam Thielen, who's 33 years old, again, probably better as a rotational guy. And then they draft Mingo in the second round. So really interesting. They're going to try and build this Bryce Young to Mingo combination, and it could happen right away. Good size guy that's probably going to play on the perimeter. I've seen Anquan Boldin comps for Mingo. Super intriguing. And yeah, at this point, taking a shot on a guy who could be a number one pretty early, I like that a lot.
Yeah, no issue with that whatsoever. I think Mingo, you know, could easily have taken him ahead of Charbonnet or ahead of Jaden Reed, ahead of, you know, Michael Mayer, Will Levis. I think he's absolutely involved in that conversation as well. I will finish up. I'll go with Sam Laporta. I'll go with that other tight end, third tight end in this year's draft, Lions tight end. Again, going to be the starter, you would figure, from day one. Opportunities in that offense. Jared Goff, you know, has a history of finding his tight ends in the red zone. You know, last year it was more the mix and match post-Hawkinson, but Laporta could be the guy. The athleticism's there. You know, again, plenty of mouths to feed in Detroit, but just think, if you can land an impactful tight end, it goes so far. And of course, you know, a little biased, there's that Iowa background, and we've seen players from Iowa who are at tight ends develop into superstar receivers at the NFL level.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Really interesting, could play right away. That offense was so good last season as well. Mike, you know, tight ends start slow, but, you know, as far as there was a whole bunch of day two tight ends. So, you know, I think about guys like, you know, Luke Musgrave.
Yep.
Is in that conversation. Luke Schoonmaker goes to Dallas. Darnell Washington in the third round goes to the Steelers, but you have Pat Freiermuth there. And by the way, Musgrave's interesting. You know, I liked him a lot, but they also drafted Tucker Kraft in the third round. The Packers went back to back. They followed that that Ravens game plan where they used to take two tight ends. I think it was Ed Dixon and Dennis Pitta, and then they did it with Andrews and Hayden Hurst.
That's true.
As well. They might have done it another time as well. They love those going two tight ends. So you know, who knows? I mean, look, with both of those situations with Pitta and Dixon, the second guy ended up being the better fantasy tight end for a long time. Andrews was actually picked after Hayden Hurst. So that's something to keep an eye on there in Green Bay. But those are some of the other guys. Like, I think Musgraves would be one of the next picks here in our third round. Tank Dell, Josh Downs, Cedric Tillman, Tyjae Spears. If you want to go back to running back, he'll back up Derrick Henry. So a lot of talent on the board here.
Yeah, absolutely. Kendrick Miller there could possibly be in a meaningful role if Alvin Kamara moves on. I mean, so many different interesting spots here. We could do this all day, but we have.
Yeah, we really could.
You have more important things to do. You're a busier man. Please tell the people where they can check out all the stuff you're doing.
Yeah, sure. So content, of course, always at the NFL page and the fantasy page at ESPN.com. I have that my annual PDF is already up and continually updated, 65 pages of player projections and all that fun stuff. So just working on content. I actually have a rookie projections article coming out, which is why I had some of them stats and tidbits at the tip of my tongue there. So that should be up, I believe, the middle of next week.
Tremendous. Mike, you know, it's always a pleasure. We'll have you back on at some point during the off season, but certainly next year for the 2024 rookie dynasty draft. We should go back and look and see how these have gone, but Mike, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Always fun, Bill. Take care.
All right. Thanks so much to Mike Clay of ESPN. Mike is so smart, so insightful, such a talented like fantasy player in his own right, which is just like his, you know, backup job after being, of course, doing such great work for us on Fantasy Focus and doing such great work for us here at ESPN when it comes to writing and projections as well. Hope you guys enjoyed our talk with Mike, and we'll be back with more next week here on the Bill Barnwell Show. Thanks so much for listening, and more is on the way.